Thank you for joining us at the Roundtable.
Brought to you by Community Education Arts, a nonprofit organization based in Noblesville, Indiana.
I'm Alice Kavanagh Scober, President of CE Arts.
And I'm Sarah E. Morin, Secretary of CE Arts. Let's sit down at the Roundtable.
So let's move on to the other ones, though. So next up on my list is, or our list, I should say. I say my list because it's like written down in front of me. The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, published in 1890. My little quote notes are many themes to explore, you know.
Right.
So what do you think about this one?
It's been a long time since I've read it, honestly.
Okay.
I remember enjoying it. I remember liking the speculative fiction element of it. We only have, I think, two on our potential list by men, and so if we are going to have a view of romance, it would be nice to have a number of different gender perspectives on there.
This one, I think, the reason I think it works, it would work for a nice year, whether it's this one or not, maybe so much... I think the themes of great romance, I'm not sure that this really would ever be anybody's idea of, oh, great romances, The Picture of Dorian Gray. But another theme I was playing with way early on, months and months ago, was kind of choosing books that had real situations that everybody could relate to, but had like a supernatural element to them. And this one certainly fit that. And out of that came a lot of, I went back and I have just way too many passages pulled out, and they're very long passages because I happen to love the way Oscar Wilde writes. This was his only non-play, okay, this was his only prose piece. And I just think he did an amazing job. But what we have in this definitely written by a man, but a homosexual man in his real life. There are definitely themes of homosexuality running through the book. Not particularly good, bad, or ugly. They're just there, and they're there in a way that you know are thought provoking, and yet at the same time, I think especially some of the dialogue that he wrote for the artist Basil. It's just so matter of fact, you know. It's just I found it very interesting that even in 1890, when you know he was writing this, that he wrote it just so clearly, you know. But it's not just a homosexual story or a supernatural story. I think when you start bringing in those elements of temptation, obsession, you know, literally selling your soul or whatever because you're obsessed with youth and beauty, or you know, these kind of things, you can, you know, this is the dumbest comparison I can say, but I'm like, you know, for some reason, like the obsession of people hoarding toilet paper came to mind as I was reading some of these passages, and I can't tell you right now why in the world that was, but you know, just this obsession of, you know, obsession. Just the way obsession takes a hold of you, you know, and obsession is often based on fear. And I think this book does a really good job of expressing that in several passages with several of the characters and the situations. And I thought that kind of, you know, was something of interest. It's high on a list of books I love. I don't know if it's high on a list of this year's choices for nice. Does that make sense?
It does. I think just the fact that it does bring into, I think it'd be the first selection we had by somebody who is openly associated with being LGBTQA+.
Yes.
And so that would really enrich it and diversify our discussion. And it could fit into our concept or theme, if we should go with it, of love, because it is kind of about self-love.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've sort of moved past the love thing, but it's definitely, that's definitely the thematically, I think this was Oscar Wilde's prose homage to, you know, homosexual love, and yet all that society, you know, pushes against that as bad is represented in the portrait and all the, you know, all the evil and all the bad stuff. So I mean, I think it's hard to, it's definitely hard to separate love from this story. I just feel like, again, it's one of my favorite books of all time, so it seems like it's always going to end up on a list, you know. I'm just not sure if it's way up there for me this year for our nice list, but you know, it's still there, so.
Yeah, for me, the thing I like most about it is it would give us a diverse author.
Yeah, so. Yeah. All right, so moving on. Next up, we have Dracula. By Bram Stoker, 1897.
Even though you've kind of moved past the romance love theme, I really still like that theme.
Yeah, I do too. I haven't moved past it. It's not my top theme anymore, I guess is the best way to put it.
But as I think of how Dracula could lead to part of that conversation, I am fascinated by the romanticization of vampires.
Yes.
And this is what started it.
Oh, this is it. This is the great-grandfather of them all. And, you know, even to this day, there's still new adaptations and things coming out. There's a new show on Netflix that, personal opinion, I've watched it. I think it's horrible. I'm so embarrassed for Bram Stoker and his original book, and it's just awful. But that's just me, you know. So I don't care for the new Netflix show, but I know it's very popular. A lot of people do like it. I just don't like the way they've told this story. But anyway, but I think this also is one of those classics that I would say it's almost like so much has come from it. It inspired so much other art, writing, you know, create movies, TVs, whatever. People don't even realize how important it is, that it was, you know, it was the first, the original, the vampire thing. There's also elements of homosexuality in this story. If you want to find those, I mean, some people reject that and say no, but I find it fascinating, some of the characters and their relationships. And I think oddly enough, when I was revisiting this one, I found an awful lot of passages that also seem to, you know, echo the current, you know, pandemic stuff. I was just like, oh, it's everywhere, you know. Because one of the things that Bram Stoker does well in this book throughout with every single character is you get inside their heads. They tell you what they're thinking, what they're feeling. He wrote, you know, the women are speaking to us. The you know, we know their thoughts, we know their feelings. They're very honest in their journaling, you know. Jonathan Harker says several times, I hope Mina never reads this, but this is the truth, you know. And Mina, his fiance, and vice versa. Mina doesn't want Jonathan to know she has certain thoughts and all that kind of stuff. And I think all the characters have this, the way he wrote the book, is a lot of it's like journal entries from the different characters. And that's how the story gets told. And it's a really interesting way of writing, and it's a really wonderful, he did a wonderful job of bringing those characters so much to life for us, giving us so much to talk about and think about in terms of each individual character, in terms of their psyche and their emotional health. And that's another thing in this, you know, in this book, we're talking about emotional health. I mean, this guy, Jonathan Harker, in just part of the book, is in a very strange, isolated situation with a vampire, you know, and who wants to suck his blood and kill him, and, you know, and he's got a little bit of the main, you know, Jonathan Harker, he thinks he's going crazy. I mean, we're sitting here in quarantine, and some people are like, I think I'm going crazy, you know. So there were elements of this that kind of bumped it up higher in my list this year than I originally, you know, again, it's one of my favorite books of all time, but I wasn't sure, is it really one of my favorite books for this year? Well, it kind of got bumped up, you know, it's kind of right up there now for me, because I really am thinking, you know, if we're talking about setting a scene of, you know, isolation, despair, you know, crazy bad things happening, a lot of the stuff that happens in the book is very supernatural. But another word you could use is surreal. The word surreal comes up in this book sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was just like, oh my gosh. It went up in my esteem for the list this year.
Well, I like what you're saying about that, Alice, because I think that my initial reaction is I would want to talk, if we were sticking with the romance theme, I would want to talk about what happens after Dracula.
Yeah.
Because Dracula in the original book, vampires are way less sexy than they are now.
Oh, yeah.
But if we're going more with this theme that we're having with the isolation and, you know, the pandemic... Yeah, then I think it's very ripe in its own right.
Yeah, I would also add that there's so much meat on the bone with Count Dracula's character in terms of another theme that, whether I wanted it to or not, I kept seeing in a lot of these works are, for lack of a better phrase, situations of domestic violence one way or another. You know, interpersonal abuse situations, and Dracula is the epitome of charming abuser. I mean, he literally casts a spell on you in order to get you under his control so he can suck your blood and kill you, you know? I mean, that's extreme and it's supernatural, but the character development and the personal relationships, the way he, the interactions that we are witness to as we read the book are really fascinating, and he may be a vampire, but I'm pretty sure I would bet that Bram Stoker was very aware of human nature and dominant personalities, especially between, you know, not just men and women though, but just dominant, for lack of a better word, abusive, controlling personalities. And I feel like this is a psychological drama, a psychological playing out of human personalities in a really amazing way if you choose to read it that way and not just as a gothic horror, the first vampire story, you know. So a lot of meat on the bone, a lot of themes, you know, a lot we could do with that.
Yeah. I also see a lot of possibilities there.
All right. This has been At the Round Table with Alice
and Sarah E.
of Community Education Arts.
Our nonprofit organization is based in Noblesville, Indiana. You can find us online at cearts.org.
This activity made possible in part with support from the Indiana Arts Commission and the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
We'd like to thank James Weston for writing our intro music and for his technical savvy.
Join us next time
at the Roundtable.